is Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Lauren Everett Bostick, the creator of The Skinny Confidential. Thanks so much for being here, girl.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So we just figured out it's been 2 years since I interviewed you last, and you just keep getting busier and busier. I get, like, overwhelmed for you by watching your Instagram.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's fun. It's a lot of movement momentum. This weekend, I actually took 3 days off of Instagram story, which I'm really proud of myself about.
That's amazing.
It was hard, but
yeah.
I did it.
Well, yeah, and if you follow her, you would know that that's hard because she's on it all the time. But I love that you just shared a little secret that you batch your Instagram stories, which is a first good little tip that we can share, because watching you, I get a little exhausted where I'm like, oh my gosh, she's always on. But it might look like you're always on, but you find a way to streamline it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I time batch all the time, and we can get into what that is. But with Instagram stories, I felt like I was posting in the moment and not enjoying the moment in front of me. So what I try to do now is I Instagram story in batches. So I'll do like 4 times a day where I sit down and do all the content in one, you know, 15 minutes, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So for the first, you know, 6 hours of the day, I'll batch that and then post it and then keep doing that throughout the day. Because if you do it in the moment, one, you can't get the fonts and colors that you want. And two, you want to make sure you do your location tags and make it so there's a takeaway for the audience. And so when I can batch and sit back and really pay attention to it and give it sort of the attention it deserves, I feel like I'm giving value.
Yeah, so it's still timely, but it's produced to be on brand.
Yes. Yeah, I want to make sure that the audience is getting something out of it rather just me in the moment just showing what I'm doing. There has to be some kind of takeaway.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so for those who don't follow you, let's tell your story from the very beginning because I love this. You were a college student at the time, right? So tell me how you kind of stumbled into being a blogger influencer.
So it was actually 8 years ago, which is crazy. I was going to San Diego State University. I was bartending until midnight, and I would come home and wake up in the morning and teach Pure Bar and Pilates and go to school, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And I almost couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, this is it. It wasn't fulfilling, mm-hmm. I guess is the word.
Yeah.
And I just always was trying to find this creative way to sort of make friends. And so everyone goes and does a sorority. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. So I went and did a sorority, and they said, it's $800. And I said, wait a minute, I'm busting my butt. And I'm you know, teaching and bartending and doing all these things. And now I have to pay to have friends. So I thought, you know, how can I connect women in a spot, maybe online, where it's free, where I can share tips and tricks and sort of have that sorority life online? And then how can I actually take it a step further and make it all over the world? And so, you know, I thought a blog. Now, this is when blogging was not cool. So there was no Instagram. It was not something people did. And I was bartending at a very exclusive bar with very, very wealthy men. And I would tell the people that I was serving at the bar what my idea was, and they would literally laugh. Like, everyone just didn't understand how someone could monetize off a blog.
Because it wasn't a thing yet.
No, it was not a thing. And I always thought when I launched the blog of it as a brand and a foundation. And we can sort of get into that, but, you know, I just really had an intention of providing value, launching as a brand, and knowing that things would grow off the blog. And I think when I look back at myself 8 years ago, I think what influencers are sort of doing now is they're getting into the business sometimes for the wrong reasons, like just to monetize. And like, mm-hmm. I think you really have to think about why you want to get into this business. And I can go off on tangents all day long.
Well, and ultimately, unless you are providing value to an audience, you're not going to grow.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think the thing to me that's mind-boggling hearing your story is the vision that you had before this even existed. And I feel like a lot of times the most successful people in the world, they start with a really huge vision, and that's really the only way to grow into it. So where do you think that vision came from within you?
I really create my own strategic future. And what that means is I'm very, very crystal clear, and I have a lot of clarity on the direction that I'm going and what I'm doing. And I've always been like that. I just know what I want and what I don't want. I'm very like beating to the tune of my own drum. I don't listen to outside noise. And a lot of people don't like that. That's not for everyone. With the vision of the brand, I laid out everything I wanted. And then I sort of worked backwards and on how to get there. And I always say, you don't get to a goal without systems in place. So I really implemented these systems before they happened. I love the word vision, but I created, instead of a vision board, I created an execution board. Mm. And this is really different. So a vision board is something where you sit down and you, you know, cut words out of a magazine, or you put other people that inspire you on this board. Instead of doing that, I said, you know, F the vision board, I'm going to do an execution board. And so I actually built the future of the blog in front of me on a poster board and like laid it out. And I think doing that pushes you more to actually execute on it. I think sometimes a vision board can be sort of that cush between the execution and the non-execution.
Yeah, a vision without execution doesn't get you anywhere.
Yes. Okay. I think to really have that clear vision, you need that execution board.
Okay, so you talked about systems in place. What's one or two systems that you just swear by that really, really help you?
My Google Calendar is nuts. It's next level. That's something that I do now, though. I didn't do that from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You mean at the beginning or now?
Whatever is working for you today.
I would definitely say to have Google Calendars and really monitor your time. So I am all about saving time, and mm-hmm. it's obnoxious to what I go to save my time. We just talked about this.
Yeah.
I mean, if I feel that something's wasting my time, I will find a way to figure something out. So an example is you know, getting a blowout at Drybar. Sounds mm-hmm. so stupid, but that's an hour where I can do a blog post. You know, taking an Uber where I can sit and batch my Instagram content. Mm-hmm. Doing things like that, listening to a podcast while I'm cooking. Mm-hmm. Everything for me has to be like passively multitasking. And I don't call it multitasking because I'm not splitting my focus. I call it passive multitasking because I'm doing something that's super, super productive, where maybe I'm gaining knowledge or doing something to build my brand. Why I'm doing something passive always. So like getting your hair done doesn't need your focus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can focus on building your brand. So I'm constantly monitoring my time.
And you're thinking of time as money, which it is.
Yes.
So it's worth the extra money to Drybar so you get more time
yes.
toward your blog.
Yes. And it's a weird thing to explain to people because people sometimes don't understand when I say that. But I believe that a huge part of the reason I've built my brand is because I'm so conscious of my time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I can be late, as you know, but at the end of the day, like every single thing is monitored, even from like my driving time to when I wake up. It's very laid out.
And I'm sure a lot of that takes saying no often.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Because you like you said, you don't want to waste your time. So that really means exercising that muscle, probably disappointing people sometimes and saying, no, I'm sorry, this appointment or whatever it is, it doesn't fit into my vision and execution plan.
Yes. I said yes to every single thing for 6 years. Everything. Like even, I remember this little girl that was 14, like had a book report that she wanted to do. And I said yes to everything. I responded to all my emails, all my DMs. I would spend an hour in the morning and an hour at night just responding and engaging and really being a part of the community and then doing all the interviews, anything that was thrown at me. And then after 6 years, I started to see sort of this shift. It was like I could take my brand to the next level, or I could really, you know, spend time saying yes to everything. So I've been a little bit more cutthroat the last 2 years with my time. I think the most important way to spend my time is towards my community. Mm-hmm. That's always number one. But instead of doing 7 blog posts a week, I'll do 4 that are really quality content. So I think time is just something that people really don't think about a lot. And it's something that I'm obsessed with.
And quality over quantity, I'm hearing you saying too.
Yes.
You'd rather do quality blog posts versus every single day and have the quality suffer.
Yes, I think, a lot of bloggers, and I've been guilty of this as well, will just, we'll throw up like an outfit collage or something that doesn't have a lot of value. And I had to take a step back and say, okay, I can do 7 blog posts a week, or I can just really produce that quality content that I think people will have a takeaway from.
Going back to the saying yes the first 6 years, do you think saying yes to everything helped you in that stage? I mean, obviously, different stages of your career and business weren't for different things. Do you think saying yes was really important for the first 6 years?
Absolutely. Being humble is so important. And I think when you're just starting out, noses to the grindstone, hustle, 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 mm-hmm. hustle. I think that especially in this industry that's, you need to have that hustle and sit and just say yes. And there's things that are uncomfortable and you lose sleep and, you know, maybe you're overwhelmed. But I do think in those first 5 years, especially, it's important to say yes. And then you can step back and say, okay, how am I going to take this to the next level?
Yeah.
That's been hard for me.
Amazing. Well, we're going to discuss how she took it to the next level, built an incredible community when we come back. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
You sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, continuing my conversation with the creator of The Skinny Confidential, which has become a huge brand with an amazing, loyal, engaging community. Tell me what you think has made the difference over the years. Has there been a few things that just really, really helped grow that community?
Yeah, I think that I have always put my community first, always. Mm-hmm. It's so important to me. And what I would do, and I still do this, I would do an hour, like I said, in the morning and an hour at night of really engaging. It was rinse and repeat in my calendar for like 6 years. Now I probably do a half an hour in the morning and a half an hour at night.
And break down what you mean by engaging, probably responding to comments and what else?
I respond to emails, DMs, comments. It's a lot of DMs now because Instagram has obviously added that feature. Snapchat has been incredible. I know people have jumped off, but it's like a way for me to text message my readers. Mm-hmm. And then all day I'll go and we have like a secret Facebook group where I'll go in and I'll talk to all these women who are like-minded and in this like incredible tribe.
And you're actually the person who's responding to these messages and comments.
I am responding to all my DMs, that's all me, all my Snapchats, and in the Facebook group.
Yeah, so, which is amazing, because guys, she has hundreds of thousands of followers, so you can only imagine how many comments and DMs that you get. So that's time consuming, but obviously there's a reason you feel it's important it comes from you. Why is that?
I think that the audience can smell I mean, there'll be times when they email and I'll have to, you know, forward it to someone that works with me and they'll get an answer. But if they want to talk to me through DM or Snapchat, I really, really try. I do my best to respond to as much as I can. I think there's two type of influencers. There's the influencer that it's more based on community and there's one that's more of a celebrity. Mm-hmm. And I think that you sort of make a choice. And one is not better than the other because, I mean, look at Chiara Ferragni of The Blonde Salad. She's got, like, she's a celebrity. I mean, she's crazy what she's built for herself. I have so much respect for that. For me, I want to do meetups. I want to hear about what the community is doing. I don't want it to be about Lauren Everett's. I want it to be more about, which is why I didn't name it, LaurenEverett's.com. I want it to be about a bigger sort of movement than me where I'm connecting women. I think when the secret Facebook group launched, for me, that was like such just like full circle because it's everything that I wanted when I started with that sorority sort of idea come together with a free platform. I mean, I think that you just sort of have to pick as an influencer what you want to be. I also have noticed that I, on Instagram, comment back on, you know, on comment sections. I follow my audience. I go like their photos. I'll comment on their stuff. Whereas, you know, some influencers will do like comment pods and stuff like that. It's just, I think the strategy for me has always been the focus on the people that are supporting the platform. Not trying to get more, but focusing on who's already there. I feel like when you focus on the people that are already supporting you, they're influencers in themselves, and they'll go out like and spread the word for you.
Totally. And I think that's where a lot of influencers and brands get it wrong, is they make it all about them, where if you're a business, you're making it exclusively about your product. If you're an influencer, it's just all about your image. And not to say that it doesn't sometimes work, and maybe sometimes there's even a place for it, but the brands and influencers I'm seeing, like you, that are killing it, they're really adding value in some way, and that way maybe a community. So what would you say is the way that you add value most? What does your community walk away from when they are a part of, or walk away with rather, when they're a part of the Skinny Confidential community?
I think that as a brand or an influencer, you always should position the reader or the consumer, if you're a brand, as the hero. And the second that you really fundamentally understand that you are not the hero, mm-hmm. and that the consumer or the reader or the audience, whatever it is the hero, I feel like there's a shift. Mm-hmm. And every single thing that you start to post needs to have this takeaway. So Mel Gibson said that with his movies, he wanted to educate, entertain, or inspire. Mm-hmm. And if you can do all three at once, you have it.
Yeah.
So with all the content I do, even if it's an Instagram story, it has to do one of those, or hopefully all three.
Yeah.
So it has to, like, even, and I also would add to Mel Gibson's quote, engage. So if you can, mm-hmm. if you can do those four things, I think that you are doing your job as an influencer. And so that's just really what I try to do.
That's a good point about engaging, because that's what social media has allowed us to do, is to have a two-way conversation. It's not just like a movie for Mel Gibson where it's, you know, movie to consumer. It's a two-way conversation. Let's talk about social media for a second. What are some of the features that you're loving the most these days? Stories, IGTV?
I love stories, because I feel like it's a different element of my life that I can share while also providing value. Mm-hmm. And it's quick, and I feel like people's attention spans are so quick. Mm-hmm. But my favorite is the podcast. And the reason it's my favorite, you're going to laugh, we're coming full circle here, is because I'm respecting the audience's time. Mm. With every other platform, you're not respecting, I don't want to say not respecting, but you're making them scroll. You're making them look at their Instagram. You're making them watch something. So it's taking away their time. Now, that's not a bad thing, because I do it all too. When they read my blog, that's taking time. Mm-hmm. But with a podcast, they're able to walk on the beach. They're able to do their makeup. They're able to cook, to clean, to do these things passively, while they're also, you know, either gaining knowledge, you know, maybe we're entertaining them, whatever that is. So it feels really good to me to be able to respect their time. And there's something intimate about being in someone's ear.
Yeah.
It's a shift. It's different.
And what I love about podcasts is meeting people where they already are. And with a podcast, you can meet them wherever.
Yes.
Where they're driving, when they're working out, on the beach, cooking. So yeah, podcasts are very, very powerful. You do a great job of being super authentic to who you are and transparent. And when it comes to empowerista, female empowerment, I feel like women are craving that. They're craving just getting rid of the filter. I'm not saying literal filter on your Instagram feed, but just really being authentic. And that's kind of cliche and a buzzword right now, but there's something to it. Women are craving that. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I think people are expecting more now. I think before it was a pretty picture in the street with maybe like a cute caption, but now people want to see what you stand for. Mm-hmm. They want to see your history. They want to see why you are the way they are. They want value. They want a lot more than they wanted when blogging happened 8 to 10 years ago. It's just the content is leveled up.
It's a more crowded space. So really, in order to stand out, you can't just be another pretty photo, right?
Yeah, I think if you're really, really yourself and that's coming through the screen, I think that's what sort of translates.
And draws people in.
Yeah, and there's so many people that don't like me. You know, I cannot count all the negative, you know, stuff that I've gotten on the internet. But when you realize that that's okay, like you're not for everyone, then you just, you know, I want them to feel like they're at happy hour with me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's okay if hundreds of thousands of people aren't into you because hundreds of thousands of people are. And those are the people that
exactly.
you want to invest in. And once you have that mindset, I feel like it's so very freeing.
And there's communities out there for everything. I always say, like, if you're interested in sea monkeys, start blogging. Like, there's someone out there who also has that interest.
Such good stuff. I wish we had more time. I literally could talk to you for hours. But thank you so much for your 20 minutes today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. And joining me today is the CEO and co-founder of Nail Snaps, Angel Anderson. It's great to have you today.
It's such an honor to be here.
So we're going to get started with the 60-second CEO. I'm going to rapid fire some questions at you. I just want you to say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
If you could have a superpower, what would you want it to be?
Flight.
Who's your favorite superhero?
Probably Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy.
How do you unplug?
Usually by the plug by my bed.
If you had an extra hour in the day, how would you want to spend it?
An extra hour I would spend out for a walk.
What's your biggest pet peeve?
People who mispronounce words.
Who's your favorite entrepreneur?
Arianna Huffington.
What's your favorite book?
Gone with the Wind.
If you could go anywhere in the world, where would you want to go?
Prague.
Let's see here. Describe yourself in one word for me.
Tenacious.
Tenacious. Okay, last question is, what's one of the craziest things you've ever done?
I won a 4-foot-high trophy at karaoke by singing Welcome to the Jungle.
Wow, well, maybe we'll get you to do some karaoke for us on here.
Maybe.
Okay, so you're disrupting an $8.5 billion industry.
Yes.
What do you think is the key to being a successful entrepreneur?
I think tenacity definitely helps. Also, understanding that there's a lot of trial and error and not getting frustrated. I had a really crappy job right out of high school. I was a telemarketer.
Not an easy job.
Not an easy job, but it actually taught me something really valuable, which is when you call somebody up and you're asking them for money for like Greenpeace or something, you can kind of tell right away if they're trying to get off the phone. And it's okay to let the ones who just want to get off the phone off the phone. But the ones who are interested in talking, draw them out and you know, get them to understand the mission and want to contribute.
So what's the key to telemarketing then? Because I love sales and marketing. Telemarketing is a form of that. It's a vehicle to be able to achieve the same outcome. So for you, what's some of the tips you have for somebody doing telemarketing?
Number one, you cannot sound like you're reading because it's going to put everybody to sleep. If you have a script, memorize it and then speak extemporaneously, because if you sound like you're reading, even for a flash of a second, you really have to have that just roll off your tongue and feel like it's a natural conversation. And you have to remember that they signed up for Greenpeace. Yeah. They support Greenpeace or whatever it is that you're raising money for.
You're just asking for the money.
Yeah, you're asking for the money. And I feel like, you know, it's the same with fundraising. You know, we did a successful Kickstarter, but then we also did an angel round recently, and seed round rather. And the seed round, weirdly, it was easier than the Kickstarter. But I think part of that is you're having a conversation with somebody who has heard about you and is interested enough and has probably done a little bit of research before they've sat down with you. It's yours to lose. And so if you just sit there and have a good conversation and really get them to understand that you're the right kind of person to have them put their faith in, and that they already think that this is a good idea, they wouldn't probably have taken the meeting. I think that, you know, that same tenacity is really important to both telemarketing and fundraising for a startup.
Well, something you said that I think is interesting is you said it was easier to raise money from an investor than it was for Kickstarter. So I want to ask you about that in a second, the keys to successful raising money. But the question I want to ask now is something that you mentioned earlier, which was trial and error. And I think it's super important that we touch on that for a second here. So what do you mean by, as an entrepreneur, when you're starting out, you have to get ready to experience a lot of trial and error?
So one of the things that has kind of been a big challenge for us is sizing. Everyone's a special snowflake. And even on the same person, from one hand to another, you might have a thumb on your right hand that's wider or narrower than the thumb on your left hand. And what's more vexing as an entrepreneur who's trying to work in the nail space is that you are probably never going to take the time to measure your nails, even if you're buying a nail wrap product. And even if you did take the time to measure your nails, nails are a convex surface. So they curve side to side and they curve front to back.
And everybody's is a little bit
and
different.
And every curve is a little bit different. So while I look like I might have petite hands, I'm actually wearing the larger size because my nails are so curved that when you lay it out flat, they're rather wide. So
how do you guys overcome that?
Well,
that's obvious. I didn't even think about that. That's crazy. You got 10 different fingers you got to deal with.
Yeah. So, so you know, and for us, it's even more of a challenge. Other wrap companies in the space just give you about 18 wraps and it's all the same design and you just pick and choose which one maybe fits the closest.
Okay.
For us, we're trying to do something where you can do a skyline that goes across your hands or a superhero flying across your hands. So if that's where the face goes, it's really important for you to know that. So all of our fingers are actually labeled on the wrap sheets, which means we have to even be more precise in the sizing. So
trial and error.
We did a couple of things. We initially went out of the gate with three different size options, and we did a lot of testing with friends, family, and then our Kickstarter backers, because they ended up being the most engaged fan base and so eager. Yeah, so eager to help and be part of this. I think Kickstarter backers in particular really feel an emotional investment, even though they might have only parted with $15, they really feel like they're part of making this happen. And truthfully, they are. So we reached out to them and had them test different sizes. And we found out that with about two sizes per finger, we could serve about 80% of the female population.
Wow.
And now we're looking at new ways to give people options of having, say, like maybe a medium size always, and then additional 10 that are smaller and additional 10 that are larger. We're also looking at ways to change up the order layout so that there's more mixing and matching possible. It's a constant challenge. And we're already doing more than anybody else in the space.
So that's your competitive advantage in a sense right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But so, there's more we could do still. So, you know, I never stop thinking about how we can get the sizing just
so
to be perfect.
So I've got to go back to the initial question.
Okay.
I've never heard anybody say yet that it was easier to raise money from an investor than it was from Kickstarter. So what's the key to raising money from an investor that made it easier for you guys?
I think the key to raising money with investors is, one, they're putting out a shingle saying, I'm an investor, I have money. Now, what I've found is that's not always true. A lot of people like to think of themselves as an investor, but they're not actively investing, and it's really important to weed those out. But if you're talking to somebody who is truly looking for a great business opportunity, and you happen to have a great business opportunity, it's really just a matter of convincing them, hey, I'm somebody who's trustworthy. Here's what I've accomplished so far. Here's what I plan to accomplish next. Be part of this journey with me. And I think it's a much easier sell than, hey, so-and-so, who's a Facebook friend that I haven't seen in 15 years, can you give $20 to my Kickstarter, which may or may not ever lead to anything? You know, I think
it's easier to raise $1 million from one person than to get a million people to give you a dollar.
Yes. So there's also the quantity factor. That's another important thing. You know, with Kickstarter, we ended up raising the money from almost 1,000 people. So having 1,000 people part with their money, you know, you're literally begging every single person you've ever met to give you $5, essentially. Yeah. And, you know, we were just aggressive because we really wanted to make sure. I didn't want to have that be the first big thing that I was trying to do on my own and have it be a public failure. So I remember being at a design conference, and you know how sometimes they'll have the speaker with the tweets going up the wall and you can watch the tweet stream? I hijacked the conference hashtag and started posting images of our Kickstarter to that. And I took over a 6,000 person hall during that conference to make sure that everybody who was there saw our Kickstarter, contributed to the Kickstarter, and I did not rest until we got funded that weekend.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, and joining me is Angel Anderson, the CEO and co-founder of Nail Snaps, which is basically I can take an Instagram photo or any picture I want, get it printed out, and just snap it on my nails, right?
Correct.
I love that. So what are you guys doing when you're looking to hire employees? Nowadays, the average millennial is going to have over 16 careers throughout their life. So that means you're going to spend all this time and energy to hire, hopefully, some great talent, train that person to become part of your company culture and vision. Mm-hmm. And then odds are, statistically speaking, they're going to end up leaving in just a short few years, if not sooner.
Yeah.
So what are you guys doing to hire amazing talent and, more importantly, retain it once you get it?
So I think hiring amazing talent is about finding people who really, really gravitate to the mission of what you're doing.
I think nowadays people are more incentivized through praise and feeling like they're part of a tribe and a community and they can work their way up through that tribe, as well as, of course, monetary compensation. But what are you guys doing? Are you using more monetary? Are you tying people into the vision, giving them different forms of compensation and praise?
Compensation and praise are kind of a given. I'd say an additional layer that we're adding is education and growth. Mm. So I mentioned sending her off to a training. Yeah. Just last week, you know, we were lucky enough to get selected for a pro bono design sprint by Elemental, which is a UX firm here in LA. And they walked us through the Google 5-day design sprint, which is fabulous. If you've never done it, I highly recommend it. And that was a wonderful experience for her to kind of grow and learn to see how that's facilitated, how it's structured. And any kind of opportunity that I have to teach her, you know, I brought her on saying, hey, I've been doing UX for many, many years. I can help you with your portfolio and mentor you as well as give you experience. But now it's really about making sure that she is growing and her skill in the UX world is going to hopefully outpace me because I'm going to need to be more involved in the day-to-day of running
the
company.
So her name's Kelly?
Her name's Kelly.
Okay, so you've got Kelly and you've got a ton of other entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs and a giant stadium, like Joel Osteen, right? 80,000 people in a stadium.
I feel the power.
And you're going on stage right now.
Yes.
Giving your best advice.
One of the things that I was very fortunate to have at Crispin was the first job in my entire career where I got to be my entire authentic self. I didn't have to put on a corporate face for that particular job. And being kind of wacky and being a little, you know, fashion forward and being a little kooky sometimes, that's part of who I am. Yeah. And I always felt like I had to tamp that sort of thing down and be very, you know, strategic minded and, you know, very linear sometimes. And it just felt very confining. At CPB, I was encouraged to really flower and be my whole creative self in every way. And once that kind of took root, it was impossible actually to turn it off. And that's what's led me to start this business. And now, as happy as I am with Nail Snaps, I see a ton of opportunity in my future. So I think be centered in yourself because that's the most fertile soil from which to grow any dream.
Angel Anderson, CEO and co-founder of Nail Snaps. I appreciate you for coming on our show. It's
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
There's always something else to be done and more you'd like to achieve. So how do you keep your day running efficiently without being overrun? Here are a few easy steps to effectively run your day as an entrepreneur. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, calm the brain. Meditation or a mindfulness practice is an essential workout for the mind. It only takes 10 to 20 minutes in the morning to practice and can really help you manage your day and your life more effectively. Number two, stay organized. If you aren't an organized or punctual person, then get the help you need to become one. This can be with an organization app or by hiring someone part-time to assist you with the task, time, and calendar management. For the Business Rockstars podcast, go to play.it. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
Most of us are familiar with travel websites and apps when planning that next vacation. But what if you happen to own a fabulous property in a vacation destination and want to rent it out? Bill Furlong is from Vrbo, and we asked him that very question.
Yeah, we try to make that process as quick and easy as possible. So you just go to Vrbo.com. There's a little link at the top right of the page that'll say, list your property. And when you click on that, the first question that a lot of people want to know is, how much rental income could I earn if I rented my property on Vrbo? And so when they put in their address, they can just find out how much they're going to earn on Vrbo. Then we, you know, ask for a couple of questions about the property so that we have a basic profile. And in a very short period of time, we'll have you up and running on Vrbo.
Vrbo.com is the place to go, or download the free app from your app store.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars, and this is our CEO Roundtable segment. And joining me today is two beautiful rock stars. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Jessica Naziri, and I am a writer, blogger, and entrepreneur. I write about technology and make it fun and exciting for females to get involved.
What about you?
I'm Catherine Ahn. I'm the founder and CEO of Teatro Restaurant and Ahn Catering.
How do you guys stay passionate and motivated in what you're doing? I know the roller coaster of being an entrepreneur is not easy, and sometimes we can hit some pretty lows. But I'm curious for you guys, how do you stay passionate, empowered, and motivated in what you're doing?
I think that's easy if you're me asking.
Answering
first. Just to begin with, the career that I chose for myself, that's where my passion started. So I continue working with people that are along the lines and within my goals. And it just keeps it exciting and fresh all the time for me.
Well, what about for you, Catherine?
I love the food industry space. I go out and eat a lot, so that's easy for me. It's also part of a family business, and that's also so important to me.
It's trendy now to be an entrepreneur. It used to be like, oh, you don't have a job and you're trying to start something. Now, being an entrepreneur or a CEO or self-employed is like the cool, hip thing to do. So let's talk about the negatives and the stressful parts of being a CEO, just to be real about it. What do you think?
Wow. Just, you know, you never know when the money will be coming in. And at the end of the day, they say, like, you know, with your passion, all that will start coming in. But there are times I'm like, wow, did I make a good decision over there? Is my rent going to pay itself? You know, so I think that it's a little unstable initially. Right. And then after a while, once, you know, your business grows, then
there's stability.
Yeah.
What about for you, Catherine? The ups and the downs. What are some of the tough parts of being an entrepreneur?
Well, like I was saying earlier, it's like the fun part is creating the product and the concept. And once that's done, then you really have to pay attention to your team and keeping them happy. And I take a lot of things to heart. So even when I hear like my dishwasher's not happy, I'm like, why is he not happy? Like, it's really hard to foster that team that wants to stick with you and put in that loyalty and that dedication. That's the part that's most important to me. And I find that that part is a skill, that balance on itself it's an art form in itself. Like, you don't want to be too close to your staff, but you don't want to be too distant to them either. So it's been an art balance for me, trying to decide how close do I get to my staff and still foster like a happy, like, core environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you get personal? Do you text them? Right. Like, how do you correspond?
Are you sending emojis or not?
I think it's just finding that good balance between making sure that they know that you are their friend, but at the same time, you're also the boss. And so I agree, though, it's hard to draw the line, but I think it's different with each person. Mm-hmm. I think you can adapt to each individual.
Yeah, you have to.
A question I'm curious to ask you guys is, do you focus more on working hard or working smart?
Ah, that's a great question. I think it's about working smart. When people finish at like 11 p.m., sure, there's always things to do, but, you know, I say try not to multitask. Have a few things you're gonna do, like three like checklist items, and then kill those, then go on to the next thing instead of like doing 5,000 things at once and ending it, you know, 1 a.m.
I agree.
So work smart.
I'm always trying to work smart. Yeah. I say that I hate working hard. I see a lot of entrepreneurs, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I admire them and respect them for it, but I see a lot of people like Gary Vaynerchuk, love the guy, amazing guy. But he brags about working 18 hours a day and not spending a lot of time with his family. And so for me, I want to do the opposite. I'd rather be relaxing 18 hours a day and have my money be making me money. So for me, I'm always trying to figure out ways that I can work smarter, which is why I'm always reading books and going to events and trying to study from other smart people that have the systems and the business model that allows them to generate the income without them. So do you have anything? Are you hard worker, smart worker?
No, I definitely agree with you, but I give credit to the staff that works hard. Because I feel like at the same time, finding those employees that want to work hard for you and show that dedication is also rare. And the other part, if I can train them to work smarter, I will. But I want them to show me that they will put that dedication and work hard.
Yeah.
And the rest, I'm willing to train them.
Yeah. I love that.
And it does depend on the line of business,
it
right?
Does. Yeah.
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 When does a CEO know that they should step down as CEO and replace themselves and hire a new CEO?
When they've done everything they can for the company. At that point,
when they're not
nothing left.
It.
Exactly.
Okay. What do you think, Catherine? You're in the...
Your family business
has been around for 40 years, so I'm sure you guys have had iterations of CEOs.
Well, you know, I realize, like... how do I say this? I think for my family, for a long time, it's because we have such a great brand and everyone's wondering, like, how come you only have five? And that's because we only have like five sisters. And it's been hard for my family to find the right partner to have us grow. It's that trust thing, like really learning how to trust someone and then being able, when it's something that you start as from scratch, you don't want to pass the torch over necessarily. It's harder, but you have to in order to grow the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's wrap our segment up here with some powerful quotes or sayings that you live by. Do you guys have any off the bat? For me personally, I say it all the time, but that's because it changed my life as soon as I started applying these, and I have them written down for me to see them every day. The habit is more important than the effort, and do less, better to completion. Those habits and conditioning myself to see those every day has really served me, because when you get done at a long day of work, you don't always want to put the effort in to go and hit the gym, but the habit's more important than the effort. So 5 minutes a day, or waking up, I don't always want to study in the morning, but I make myself do it. And if I don't want to do an hour, I'll just do 5 minutes. Because again, the habit's more important than the effort. And then as a CEO, you're always juggling stuff. So trying to do less, better to completion, and not start something if I'm not going to finish it. But what about you guys? What are some sayings or quotes that you've lived by that have served
you? Well,
now
I like that one. Yeah. I'll take that.
I had this one came. It was more of a fable, but it's too long. So I won't bore you guys
just one quick saying.
Okay, so one quick saying. You are what you think you are, because I think it starts from all from within.
One.
Like, if you don't, you think you're gonna fail, you're gonna fail. But if you believe you can do it, you're gonna keep working hard at it, and push yourself there.
The power of focus.
Yeah.
I love that one. What about Jessica? Let's end on a good one.
There are so many, and I get inspired all the time whenever I meet people. I mean, that's fantastic. The one that you just said is fantastic. But I think that this is something that I always say to myself. If it were easy, everyone would do it. Mm. Right? So if it's hard, there's a reason and there's a passion and then it'll be worth it in the end.
I love that. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.